I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There have been a couple of interesting reports, studies actually, on happiness. One done by Lancet that looks at happiness dipping in midlife in the affluent West, taking a nosedive actually as you hit middle age, but only if you live in the affluent West. Because in other countries, like in Africa, happiness was low throughout life. In Eastern Europe, the former Soviet Union, and Latin America, happiness declined with age. So we thought we'd be looking at happiness, and particularly midlife happiness, and because most of us listening, some of you I'm sure are listening in other countries, but mostly we're living in the Midwest. And so happiness and understanding positive aging this hour in America. Professor Carol Riff is our guest, and we'll be talking about understanding positive aging, addressing aging as a multidisciplinary challenge is what she does, requiring the integration of many levels of analysis, sociodemographic characteristics, life stresses, health behaviors, neurobiological risks, health outcomes, mental and physical. Dr. Riff is a professor of psychology and director of the Institute on Aging at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Our phone number, I would think that we'll have a lot of calls about this midlife dip. Do things get better if you're healthy when you're past it, when you're 55 and 60 and 65 and 70? Studies show that indeed, that may be the case. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're trying to get our guest on online here in just a moment. There was an interesting piece in The Atlantic that we thought about referencing this hour because it looks at this issue of midlife and it talks specifically about the real roots of midlife crisis, what it is about our 40s and our early 50s that fill us with a sense of angst. What happens? Do we glide through and have a great time in our 20s? In our 30s, we get down to work and we're very busy and we're raising families and starting careers. And then in the 40s, we may realize that we're not going to go as far as we thought we were going to go in life, or we may find that we're dealing with stresses of parents having problems and still having children at home. And by the time you get through all of that, and if you're still a fairly healthy person, you're a little wiser. And if you're in your 50s and maybe in your 60s, you're just you're feeling a little better. You're feeling calmer. You're feeling that, well, that wasn't so bad. So that's what we talk about this hour, and I think we have secured our guest now, so let's make sure that we have Dr. Riff, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now I feel like I can go through the rest of my life comfortably. I didn't know we'd have you there. When you look at these international studies, it was interesting to me that except, and this makes sense, if you're in really poor country, your life is probably really difficult for most of your life. But that there is this dip thing that happens, this happiness dip that happens when we are in middle age in America. Why is that?
Well, I'm not particularly fond of the article. I think it glosses over a lot of complexity. The dip in midlife is there only if you, as they say, equalize everything else, adjust for everything else, like people's educational status or their income or their marital status. Or, I think it's a lot more complicated story. But beyond that, I would say those studies that are being referred to are dealing with what I consider a very narrow handle on what is happiness. Mm-hmm. Happiness is a big subject, and it goes way beyond asking people questions about their life satisfaction, or even just direct questions about how happy are you. I've basically spent my career studying psychological well-being in large national studies, including international comparisons. And we tell a much more complex story that doesn't come down to this U-shaped curve that supposedly represents some kind of handle on the midlife crisis. I mean, what can I say? I think the article reflects a lot of upper middle class whining. Mm.
All right. There we go. We'll start with that. You write about our six dimensions of well-being. What are those dimensions? What makes up our well-being?
Well, let me just, I'll mention the six dimensions. I've spent a lot of my career studying, but I also want to just go all the way back to the ancient Greeks, who spent a lot of time thinking about the topic of happiness and what is it and how should we think about it. And even, you know, a couple thousand years ago, there were differences of opinion. There was one form of happiness that was more about pleasure and satisfying desires. That was called the hedonic approach to happiness. And I think that is captured more by life satisfaction, positive emotion, positive affect kinds of questions. But Aristotle, who was the person whose ideas were far more influential in my thinking, formulated happiness in a very different way. He formulated it as the realization of our true potential. So it's more about striving to make the most of your talents and capacities. And those things show very interesting age trajectories. So in the work that I've done, we have studied something called personal growth, which is a subjective assessment of whether or not people feel like they're making the most of their talents and capacities as they age. We also study something called purpose in life, which is asking questions about, do you feel that your life has meaning and direction? Do you have reasons to get out of bed in the morning? Are you actively engaged in the world around you? Those two components of psychological well-being in numerous longitudinal studies, and let me underscore longitudinal studies, because that was another concern I had about the studies summarized in the Atlantic article. Although a few of them were longitudinal, they didn't say what the time frames were. Most of them were cross-sectional, and you can get into all kinds of confounds in basically interpreting what the findings mean, unless you're actually tracking the same people over time. Mm-hmm. So when we track the same people over time, we certainly don't find a midlife dip in something like purpose in life or personal growth. What we see is a kind of steady decline with aging. For another aspect of well-being, we study something called environmental mastery, which is, do you feel that you can manage the world around you? Are you able to create a life around you that suits your needs and capacities? And that aspect of well-being in longitudinal studies actually looks like it improves in midlife. So those are just examples of some of the components of well-being that I think are just completely missing in the Atlantic article. Another component of well-being that looks like it shows some ascendancy, some gains in midlife, is something called autonomy, which asks people questions about whether or not you feel you're kind of living according to your own convictions, marching to your own drummer, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think, though, that there is some sense that happens in midlife that you're halfway through your life and that you do have hopes and dreams if you have the means to fulfill those? And obviously there are a lot of people in this society who can't even think about being happy because they're trying to make enough money to get food on the table and they're too busy to even think about happiness. But there's something, if you've had things that nurture you and you've been nurtured during your life, that all of a sudden you're doing an assessment. You know, you're halfway through. Have you done a good job raising children? How are you dealing with your parents leaving this world and some of their friends and your relatives leaving this world? What do you want to accomplish? And do you have time enough to do that? Is there unhappiness that you haven't reached some goals that you have? Don't you think there's a natural thing that happens during those years?
Oh, well, I mean, I think all the items you just listed are potentially things that people are struggling with in midlife, but a lot of people are gaining gratification in midlife. They are doing well as parents. They are doing well in their work responsibilities, and their commitment to their communities and to, you know, their own parents. So I just don't buy the argument that there is this kind of to be expected dip in midlife. There's no question in my mind that midlife is a time for many people when they may engage in more reflection about what has been accomplished relative to what their aspirations are or were. But I don't necessarily think that that leads to a sense of disappointment or sort of failure to achieve early expectations. Certainly that happens for some. My biggest beef with the article is this claim that this is almost like a universal thing. Everybody can expect this to happen. And I just think that's off the mark. And it reminds me of, let me just note, I'm 64. And when I was going through graduate school a long time ago, there was a lot of writing then about the midlife crisis. People were groping for, you know, is it a real thing or is it just, you know, some subgroup of people who are articulating complaints that maybe a few other people can resonate with. And so in some scientific studies, people tried to get a sharper handle on it. So a major national study that's ongoing in the United States that I'm currently the principal investigator on, it's known as Midlife in the U.S. The acronym is MIDAS. And we've been studying people moving across the decades of adult life via this study for the last 20 years. And we have, you know, 100 publications on what happens to well-being, not only as people are aging, but as they're dealing with particular life challenges. And it certainly doesn't add up to some simple story that people can count on experiencing some drop in their well-being in midlife.
We're going to welcome phone calls for our guest. We're talking about midlife and if there is a happiness dip in midlife. There have been some studies, a Lancet study that caught our attention that was reported on by the BBC that found that there was a dip in middle age, but only if you live in the affluent West. Our guest this hour has done extensive studies on aging and on successful aging in this society. Dr. Carol Riff is professor of psychology and director of the Institute on Aging at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Do you think that it's too simple for us to say that as you hit middle age, you may be experiencing a bit of dip in terms of how pleased you are, how satisfied you are with your life? Do you think this is it and it's not enough? But as you move beyond those years, the Atlantic article that we were referencing says that 10 years later, when you look at your life again, you think, hey, that wasn't too bad. Or if you're 70, oh, what? How great it would be to be 50 again. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, @KDunnShow. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happiness in middle age this hour. Dr. Carol Riff is our guest, and we have a number of calls coming in. We'll start with Cam in Madison. Hi, Cam.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a couple of comments. I really agree with what you're saying, Dr. Riff, that I don't think it's across the board that there's a dip in happiness. My husband and I moved here from Beverly Hills 20 years ago. I wanted to especially leave that wealthy section. I didn't see a lot of happiness in Los Angeles. I call it a city of want because you're constantly being faced with what you can't possibly achieve. Very few people have it. We moved here. We have made many, many friends. I'm 70 now. I've had very serious health issues, but I can tell you that I'm happier now and more content than I've ever been in my life. I paint. I have friends. I take long walks. We garden together. This is a good time to be alive.
Hmm.
And I wanted to tell you that. I mean, I've had cancer twice. I have an aneurysm. I deal with it all philosophically. The fact is, I have good health care. I don't live in the Middle East. We're not involved in a war in this country, though in other countries. And I think the fact that I have good health care, I have an understanding husband, I have family around me, and family is the most important aspect to my health.
Hmm.
And I'm happy.
Well, there's an endorsement of being 70, huh? Doctor?
Yeah, those were great comments. They brought to mind a wonderful book by Bertrand Russell, the famous British philosopher. He wrote a book called The Conquest of Happiness.
Mm.
And his central point in the book is that, you know, happiness is not just something that happens to you, like perfectly ripened fruit dropping into your mouth. It's really something you have to work for, work at, actively pursue, often in the face of difficulties, challenges, and so on. And I think if one adopts that kind of perspective on happiness, which certainly the person who was just speaking reflects, I think, that stance in a very eloquent way, then there's no need for this hand-wringing about the dip in happiness in midlife. I mean, I would say if you're even the examples given in the Atlantic article are about these incredibly privileged people. Like, I just published my first book, but I don't feel good enough about who I am, or I just got tenure. I mean, to be unhappy in the midst of, you know, such privileged kind of lives, I would say, is a failure of Bertrand Russell's essential message. Like, get with it and take active steps to actually see and appreciate what makes your life good.
She brought up, though, and it's one thing that everybody fears, and they start thinking about it more in middle age, I think, that you might get cancer, you might get heart disease, you may have an aneurysm, you may have something that will be debilitating. I thought that what Cam had to say was interesting in that she stated, matter of fact, that she'd had these, but she remained happy. And I'm wondering what it is within the human psyche or the human soul that can allow you to take that in and remain, you know, go through difficulty and remain content.
In fact, I would say it is the challenges in our lives, and they do accumulate as you age. I mean, if you live long enough, you are going to deal with health problems. You are going to deal with loss events. That's in the nature of the human journey. But those losses, for many people, paradoxically become places from which they derive deep sense of meaning and insight, and loss can actually deepen the quality of people's relationships to others, deepen their appreciation for maybe some of the basic simple things that remain in their lives. So there is a kind of, I think, midlife fear that perhaps some people experience because they're anticipating that the story is going to get worse with aging. And in fact, if you live long enough, there are going to be, you know, difficult things happening that you have to confront. But what we find, and that to me, that's the beauty of studying something like purpose in life and meaning in life, is that paradoxically, for some individuals, those losses are sources of deeper kinds of meaning.
Thank you very much, Cam, for your call. We go to Jackie next. Hi, Jackie.
Hello. Great show, and I love your last comment, Doctor. Mine is a quick story. I'm a 55-year-old woman, but for my 50th birthday, I decided to give myself the gift of a day of reflection. And so I told all my friends and family politely and graciously that I wasn't going to receive any calls or contacts between 8 a.m., because that's 2 p.m. in the U.K., so my family from there could call before that, and until after 6 p.m. when my husband would come home and cook my birthday dinner. And I was going to spend the first 50 years basically trying to reflect on my life and see if I thought, by my own standards, it added up to a hill of beans or not. And about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, one of my good friends called. So I said, hello. And she said, hello. So I said, hello. And she said, hello. And I said, why are you calling? And she said, to wish you happy birthday. So I said, thank you, but you got the email. I know you did. You acknowledged it. I was taking today to think about the value of my life. And she said, seriously, that takes all day? And she's like 10 years younger than me, so I'll give her that, you know, but she would still be in her, you know, she was still 40. And which leads me to my point of, you know, I think we're looking for heroic and big moments instead of recognizing that the everyday things we do in our world, some of them are bigger than others, are really what make our lives beautiful and special and important and things to be happy about and with. And on that note, as I always do when I call into Kathleen's program, I'm going to run to my 2:30 meeting and I'll listen to your answer later. But I'm glad I made you giggle. Enjoy your afternoon. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jackie, very much for your call. That was a delightful call.
That's great. It also reminds me of another little phrase I like to carry around with me comes from Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist monk who's written a lot of great small books about mindfulness and being centered and that sort of thing. And he reminds all of us that a really good way to get out of bed in the morning is to begin with the question, what's not wrong?
Let's go to Lisa next in St. Germain. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Good, very timely. I'm 56 years old. I've increasingly become very unhappy. I dislike where I live. My relationship is turning south. And in fact, today I'm hitting the road for 2.5 weeks. I'm going to go west and try to find a new place to live. And if I do, put everything I own up.
Go. Where do you want to go, Lisa?
Well, I'd like to go someplace warm. I've pretty much had it with winter. It's been pretty severe up north, and I've been up there 10 years, and 10 years was my time frame when I moved. But someplace warm, and lately I've been thinking a lot about giving back. In fact, for Thanksgiving, I own a little restaurant for Thanksgiving. We hosted some people from the local food pantry, people who were less fortunate than us. And I'd like to do something like that. I feel like maybe that would help me, I don't know, would find happiness. And I, when I say that, I'm not completely a depressed, miserable person. I'm just unhappy in my current situation.
Dr. Riff.
I'd like to find something new.
Yeah, Dr. Riff.
I think the idea of getting out of yourself and thinking about contributions you have or could or will make to the lives of others is a wonderful antidote to, you know, feeling some sort of midlife malaise. And I would also just note that midlife for some people is an opportunity for making change. So if there is a kind of deep and persistent sense of dissatisfaction about some aspect of a person's life, midlife may be a time in which people feel they still have an opportunity to make changes that might improve their situation, including their satisfaction overall with their lives. Mm-hmm.
Well, what about making changes as you age? What do your studies of aging, how do they deal with change? Is it, because I heard, you know, when my father was very sick and I wanted him to come and move to Milwaukee so I could look after him, he was still in his own house at the age of 93 and I had to move him. But there was much discussion about people will die if you have to uproot them or make a change that is so substantial later in life that some people, most people just can't deal with that. That it's best to maybe stay put and to be happy with where you are instead of making a big change. Have you studied that at all?
Well, lots of people are studying it, and I don't think the evidence is, you know, clear in any succinct way other than to say families all over America are struggling with those exact issues. Mm-hmm. Where is the best place for the older parent to age? Is the best option to try to provide support and assistance so that your aged parent can grow old for as long as possible in their own home? Is it to move them closer to you? Is it to move them into an assisted facility in the community that they know well? I think families all over America are struggling with those kinds of questions, and each of them are making their own choices and I think trying to make the best of it. But I don't think there's a clear prescription for how any of us should be handling that.
Mm. And you mentioned you were 64. Do you think about and do you make plans for, and do people in middle age, will it give them more peace of mind or greater well-being, sense of well-being, for them to decide where they may want to be at 84 and let everybody know that and sort of work toward that? Is that an important thing to do when you're in midlife?
Oh, gosh. I've been studying aging since I was in my 20s, so I'm probably a lot more interested actually in the topic than many people because I've been studying it for so long, and so I'm actually enjoying the actual experience of living it.
Good, good.
To see if, you know, my expectations about it are lining up with what I'm actually experiencing. But what I would say is I can't imagine for myself trying to prepare now for the life that I want to lead when I'm in my 80s. Mm. I can't imagine it. I mean, there are too many unknowns. Even just based on the life that I've lived up to this point, there have been too many unexpected turns, unanticipated changes. But I mean, to me, that's what makes life interesting.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from WD who says this: I'm 55 and I'm happier now than when I was younger. For many years, I lived in one-room apartments and worked in low-paid jobs I hated. I still have a low income, but many of my life goals have been met. Now I have my own video production company. I own the house I grew up in, which I love, and most of the time I can work inside my house. The Affordable Care Act has helped me not have to worry about health care, and the Wisconsin public indoor smoking ban allows me to go places and still be able to breathe. Life is good at age 55.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah, it is wonderful. Lisa, thanks for your call, and WD, thank you. Leslie in Madison, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm 58 and have worked all my life since I was 14 and am working right now. And just have worked hard towards basic things, just simple things like getting a house, taking care of the kids, whatever they need, and watching them grow up. And all of a sudden, around age 50, right before I turned 50, I just started getting this euphoric feeling. And I'm not taking anything. It's just like, I would tell my husband, I don't know what's going on, but I just feel euphoric. And it's still, I mean, it seems like life, I've been fortunate, I guess, to not have any terrible, terrible things, but, you know, the usual things with kids and losing your parents and that sort of thing. But it seems like every day I wake up and, well, the first thing in my head is you got to wake up with a smile on your face. That's what I wake every morning when my alarm goes off at 5. I say I have to wake up with a smile on my face, and I just jump out of bed, and life just keeps getting better, I think.
Yeah,
is that weird?
I think those comments, not at all. Those comments, I think, reveal more of this commitment to actually trying to see the good that's in life every day, to frame things in positive ways, to wake up with a positive kind of life outlook. I think we can't underscore the importance of that enough, especially for people.
I've always been positive. My friends have always said I'm like an unusually positive person, because one thing my mom taught me when I was a little kid, never say anything bad about anybody. And I honestly think that is one of the best pieces of advice anybody can do, is just not talk about, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it. And then you don't have to have any guilt feelings about what somebody might have heard you say or something. I don't know.
I'm laughing because my mother gave me the same advice. I think it is good advice. But one thing I want to insert in the discussion here is that the research on happiness and well-being and whatever type of well-being that you're talking about, it's increasingly showing that being in these positive states of mind, and they don't always have to be about just you're happy and you're thrilled with everything. It can be that you're quietly content and that you're seeing progress in your life, even if it's been difficult. But those kinds of things actually are increasingly looking like they're very important protective influences on people's health as they grow older. So that's another angle that I would emphasize with regard to the putative dip in happiness in midlife. I would say to midlife people who are experiencing that dip, you know, make an effort to, you know, try to get yourself in a different place psychologically, because the evidence increasingly indicates that people who walk around feeling that their lives are meaningful and good and that they're accomplishing things and they feel they're making useful contributions, it looks like those things are good for people's biological systems. It looks like it's anchored in what's going on in brain processes related to emotion regulation. So there's just a lot out there that should urge all of us to not get carried away with the idea of inevitable malaise in midlife.
And, you know, listening to you, Leslie, I would think you're the kind of person that people would want to embrace as a friend. I would imagine you have a lot of friends because somebody who has that kind of joyfulness about herself and kindness, really, and not bringing everybody down, you're the kind of person people want to go have coffee with, you know, or take a vacation with or talk to.
Well, and I like to help people. So then I think that's why I have a lot of friends, because they can count on me for some help.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that gives somebody meaning as well. Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
Hey, let's spend just a few more minutes, Doctor, talking about this purpose in life, because that can be such a big thing. Where you find purpose in life, is it really different for every human being? Does it mean being of service to other people, or can you just do something that's good for yourself? Does it mean writing something that's profound? What does it mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the manifestations of it are, you know, myriad. I mean, there's no single way to do purpose in life or to find meaning. It's really like the core existential challenge that we all face. And I just want to underscore here that the person who first thought about effectively the life-saving features of purpose in life was someone who spent 3 years in a Nazi concentration camp. I'm talking about Viktor Frankl. And his book, Man's Search for Meaning. Those were the core ideas in his book, is that what differentiated the people who survived the camps, if they weren't murdered or gassed or died from starvation, the people who survived were the ones who were able to find some meaning in that most horrific of horrific experiences. And he then went on to develop a whole form of psychotherapy based on finding meaning in adversity. So, I mean, I think we can find meaning in the good things that come in our lives, but we can also find meaning. It's really our task to find meaning also in the bad things that happen. You know, what messages can I take away from the loss I might have experienced that can deepen my insights about myself or my relationships with other people? Those, I think, are just core challenges that we all face, and they can enrich life. Even when you're getting really old and decrepit and falling apart, I mean, there are people who are still able to do that, and I just marvel at them.
Mm-hmm. Leonard in Madison, hi.
Yes, good afternoon. A wonderful show. Say, I was just curious. My wife and I were at a time in our lives, we're both in our 50s, and more financially stable than we were when we were younger and better placed career-wise and such. So we decided to have our wonderful baby daughter. And so at 50 years old, we decided that we were going to add a child to our fold, and we have sons and daughters in college or finishing college. And you know what? It has been absolutely amazing experience because we now have lots more time, unfortunately, I hate to say it, with our daughter than we ever did with our kids when we were chasing jobs, careers, and education and everything else. And I was just going to ask your guests, it seems like we're finding a lot more parents in their 50s that are just starting as parents or having children again in their 50s. Seems like it's becoming a bit of a trend, and I wonder if she's experienced that at all in her work.
Well, when we look at the demography of parenting, certainly you do see evidence that people are waiting to have children. Maybe not till their 50s. That might be, you know, pretty much the extreme end of it. But certainly people are waiting to have their children in their 40s, more so than was true in the past. It's also the case that more people are choosing not to have children. I mean, there's just a lot of interesting social change going on with regard to what we used to think of as kind of, you know, basic life events that happen to most people. The way that the life course is unfolding, I think, is just becoming far more varied. But what I really love about the example that you just provided is this example of finding a new direction for infusing life with a whole new set of meanings and activities and engagements in midlife. Bravo.
Yeah. It's got to be still kind of difficult for most people to have kids when they're in their 50s, though, right? Unless you become a foster parent at that age, or you can adopt a child at that age as well if you're not capable of reproducing, which I would think a lot of people aren't in their 50s. You think, Doctor?
Yeah. Oh, yes, I think so. I mean, I think many people would not have it, not find it a biological option. But the fact is, you know, we're all living so much longer. I mean, the gains in life expectancy happening in our era, in our century, are incredible. And people are reaching old age in much better health than was true in the past.
Yeah.
So I think it's not crazy to assume that individuals in their 50s would have, if they take good care of themselves and they're responsible about their health, that they could actually be very well suited to parenting in those decades.
Hmm. Leonard, thank you so much for your call, and we'll take more in just one moment. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Our guest this hour is Dr. Carol Riff, Professor of Psychology, Director of the Institute on Aging at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Is it true, as some studies are indicating, that as people approach midlife, happiness seems to slump? Our guest says it's a much more complicated story than that, and we're talking about what it is and listening to your stories of midlife and beyond this hour of the show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow, during this time period, money may not be able to buy you love, but it might be able to buy you the ear of a senator. We'll be speaking with the author of a fascinating book, because I don't know any of these people. Maybe you do, but it's Billionaires, Reflections on the Upper Crust is the name of the book. Darrell West is the author. He is with the Brookings Institution and interviewed some billionaires, but also looked at the influence they have on our political system. So that's coming up tomorrow at 2 o'clock. All right, back to phone calls. Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Mike.
Yeah, I'm going to set mine up here just a little bit. I'm 53 years old, and my goal when I was a kid, because I was dirt poor, was I wanted to have $1 million in cash when I was 40 years old.
Mm.
And I achieved that goal. I had $1 million in cash, and I had all kinds of real estate that I owned. And, of course, then the meltdown came. And I took the hit and, you know, lost pretty much most of it.
Mm.
And then I had heart trouble, and then I had cancer.
Oh,
and,
my.
You know, it was like, wow, you know.
Yeah,
and
like,
there's two things that came out of that. One, I was miserable in my 40s chasing material things. And after all this, I realized kind of it was the moment of clarity. It's not about things. It's about people. And I've got a beautiful family and able to support myself. And, you know, I'm coming back. I'm happier today than I've ever been at 53.
Hmm. And you're feeling pretty healthy, too, Mike?
Well, yeah, that's been a battle, you know, with cancer
right.
and then the heart problems. But my health is better, so
good.
I appreciate my health and realize without health and without family, you're really, you don't have anything. Money doesn't matter. So it's a great place to be.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you called. And how does somebody, I don't even know if you can work at this, a lot of people would become incredibly bitter to have experienced what Mike experienced. He wanted to get all this money, got this money, he was comfortable, and then he lost everything, and then he got really sick. A lot of people would say, that's it, throw in the towel. Wouldn't they, Dr. Riff?
Well, but he's such a wonderful example of how those losses actually ended up being occasions for him to really see through the falseness of what he had been pursuing previously. You know, so sometimes loss events get us to wake up and see things more clearly that we couldn't, for whatever reason, bring into focus before.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what may lie behind, for some people, the dip in midlife, which, you know, let me be clear, it's not like I'm saying I don't think it happens. I just don't think it happens in such a universal way.
Mm-hmm.
It happens for some people, and for some people it may be very much about this. They're somehow trying to realign their achievements with their aspirations, but even that can be an opportunity for, like, rethinking whether or not those earlier life aspirations made any sense. Or, you know, they were really designed to make your life fulfilling. And I think Mike is a really great example of where, you know, his earlier aspirations to make a lot of money were maybe not what it's all about.
Thank you, Mike, so much for your call. And another Mike, this one in Green Bay. Hi.
Hey, Kathleen. So I feel gratified to be able to talk to you after the first Mike. Because I was one of those people, too, always, you know, chasing the rainbow and what's going to happen next. Well, I retired from a job that I absolutely loved too early. And it was, you know, because of political kinds of things. But that's not the point. I've gone through four different kind of transformations. The first one was, what do I do now? I'm only 55. Then, well, I'm going to save the world. And so, I'm a counselor and coach and, you know, well, that wasn't satisfying. Then I know I'm going to be a motivational speaker. Well, that wasn't satisfying. And what finally came down to it was, you know, I worked hard all my life, and I saved, and I'm healthy, and my wife loves me, my kid loves me. What's wrong with saying thank you and enjoying a little bit? So now I use all my skills as, you know, in volunteer efforts, and I, you know, substitute teach when I want to pay for golf, and I just, you know, I've transformed, and I've grown, and it's been hard, you know, it's been really hard, but boy, I am so grateful to, you know, be able to grow and read, and now my latest thing is really getting back into music and learning how to do art.
Great. Mike.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Those are all terrific examples, I think, of ways in which people can make life so good in their later years. I mean, focusing, there actually is research showing that older people who volunteer gain benefits in psychological well-being. But I also think the arts, you know, broadly speaking, whether it's music or literature or poetry or experiences with nature. I mean, there are just so many fabulous things out there that are just there for the taking. So, you know, for anyone who is feeling some degree of malaise, I would say, you know, remember all the rest of this. You know, all of the rest of this is there for you to partake of and, you know, enrich your life with.
Thank you, Mike, so much. All these inspirational calls. This is great. Patty in Green Bay. Hi, Patty.
Hi.
Hi.
I just turned 66, and I want to say after 25 years of marriage, I went through a divorce. I went back to UWGV. I got my educational degree. I graduated at the age of 50. I have been teaching ever since, and it was the best thing I ever did. And I would like to encourage everyone to go back to school, take classes, and it just changes your whole outlook on life.
I strongly endorse that path as well. I think we can never learn enough about ourselves, about the world around us. I do think education is not something that's out there just to prepare us for jobs and an occupational life. Education is there to enrich our knowledge of the world around us. And so I think it's a fantastic thing for people in their later adulthood to get back into the educational process.
Thank you so much for your call, Patty. John Madison, hi.
Hi. I'm 75. I retired at 58.
Oh.
Wrote a novel, became a guest columnist for a local paper. My daily goal is to make at least one person laugh every day. And I think seniors owe it to their kids to choose where they're going to retire from. And you know, after my wife passed, sold the house, picked out a retirement community for independent living, and things are going well.
And I did laugh a moment ago. Have you made other people laugh today, John?
Oh, yes. Yes. I was checking out at the Walmart, and after a long line of people using credit cards, I asked the cashier, "You do take cash, don't you?"
Mm-hmm.
And she laughed.
Very good. Yeah. You can't say enough about laughter. It's very important.
Kidding.
Isn't that true for your whole darn life?
Exactly.
Thank you, John, for your call. Peg in Rice Lake. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
Well, I just turned 79 in August.
All right. Happy birthday. Late, but happy birthday.
And I decided to figure out what I thought about that. And I've always been a thinker. I analyze things. My mother, my whole life, always said, "You think too much." But I liked it that way. And so I'm still thinking, and I've been thinking about dying. How am I going to react to that? Thought, well, I was born. First thing they did was probably wallop me on the butt. I didn't like that, but maybe they won't do that if I die. Mm. And I'm looking at it very direct.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no point in being scared. The main reason for being scared is because you just don't know about it.
Yeah.
And I live alone in my little house in the woods with one cat and one dog.
Oh.
And I got to outlast them because they don't have anybody else to turn to.
Hmm.
And so I work on that, staying alive, that is. Hmm. And I'm not unhappy about it. I think I can handle it.
I think you can handle it as well. I hate to cut you short, but we're out of time. And she thinks. She's a thinker. It's good to be a thinker. Oh, we didn't even get to death and how we might be afraid of that, which makes the whole time period easier. But Dr. Riff, thank you so much. Didn't we have some wonderful calls? I just feel inspired.
Terrific. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah, very upbeat.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being with us. Dr. Carol Riff is a professor of psychology and director of the Institute on Aging at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster for producing the hour, to KP Whaley for on-air production. Don't forget, tomorrow during this hour, we're going to learn all about billionaires' reflections on the upper crust.